I've been trying to contact the Egyptian authorities. I want to know how frequently the Rafah border is open, and under what conditions can the Palestinians cross?
All you have to do, you have to send your request and your details, your name, everything, to the email, which I will give it to you now, and you will hear from the authority back home.
With the Gaza Strip under siege, there is a big problem for anybody who has family inside. Last year, we went on a convoy into Gaza to deliver medical aid and break the siege. It was very surprising to be greeted with such hindrance from the Egyptian authorities. Along the way, we were held up frequently, and at the border, the Egyptian authorities permitted us to exit at Rafah, but after a few hours, they changed their minds and cancelled the stamps. Since Naeem and I got back, we couldn't stop thinking about it. If it's that difficult for us to cross, then how is it for the Palestinians whose lives are divided by this border?
In and around Birmingham, a few artists have graffitied on the wall what they think about what's happening in Palestine and to show that their support and everything. My personal connection with Palestine and Gaza happened a long time ago when I was when I went over there to do some work on peace building between different communities. When we had the 30-day bombardment of Gaza, that's when we had to act and do something.
We've been trying to find out answers and discover the truth. Neither the Egyptian authorities in London or Cairo were getting back to me. Naeem and I decide to head to the heart of Westminster to get some more information on the political situation at the Rafah border.
We're here at Westminster at the Houses of Parliament. We're going to see Jeremy Corbyn, MP for North Islington. So let's go.
Hello, Jeremy. Thank you for seeing us.
From your understanding, what is the political situation on the Rafah border?
It is the border between Egypt and the Palestinian state. The problem is the Palestinian state has never been set up, doesn't exist, and hasn't been recognised. The real access and control is a series of agreements made internationally, which the Palestinians have to put up with one way or the other.
What is Egypt's objective in maintaining the blockade?
Egypt, I have very mixed feelings about it. We had a very long meeting with both the Egyptian Foreign Ministry and the Arab League. The counter-argument the Egyptians put is that if they opened the border, then Israel would close all the other borders. In effect, they would be virtually annexing Gaza because that would become the in and out point, and supplies for Gaza would then automatically come. I also think that Egypt has become embarrassed and annoyed when, during Operation Cast Lead, it was the Turkish intervention and the Turkish diplomatic activity that helped to provoke a more worldwide response than what the Egyptians were doing. And Turkey's support for the last flotilla, indeed huge support for it, and the registration of those vessels in Turkey, has begun to tip the diplomatic activity quite a lot within the region.
And what is the purpose of the Israeli ID cards?
Well, it becomes a form of control on their movements, their behaviour, and indeed their future residence. And so the use of the ID document is a very powerful threat. I mean, it's quite deliberate. It's almost colonial in its approach, saying, well, look, if you accept this document, it doesn't really mean anything, but it means you can get through the crossing, but it means you can get a job, but it means you can work. And by the way, you accept our rule over you at the same time.
We're planning on going to the Rafah border to find out what the situation is like there for the Palestinians to go into Gaza to visit their relatives.
I wish you all the very, very best on your journey. Best of luck in supporting the Palestinian people.
The Egyptian authorities were still not replying to my questions, so we decided that the only option left is to go back to the border and talk to the people ourselves. The Egyptian authorities have announced that the border will be open for just 3 days. Like thousands of others from all over the world, we head to the Rafah border. We've managed to travel overland to Al Arish, which is the last town before Rafah. We find a local Bedouin who's prepared to take us the back routes to avoid any checkpoints and questioning. I'm not sure if we'll make it to the border, and if we do get there, will I even be able to film? We've arrived in the night and been welcomed by a group of protesters who've been camped at the border for the last few months. As it has been announced on the TV, from the first light, people begin to flock from all directions. In 2003, as part of Israel's unilateral disengagement plan, the Israeli authority evacuated the border and the EU stepped in, allowing Palestinian and Egyptian authorities to maintain the border themselves. At this point, civilians were able to pass the border relatively easily, up until 2007 when Hamas defeated the Fatah government. In protest, the European Union left entirely, announcing that they would not collaborate with Hamas, who they considered to be a terrorist group. With growing US pressure and the Israeli Defense Authorities claiming that the border posed a security threat, Egypt agreed to follow suit and close the Rafah border.
It's 7:15 in the morning. People have been gathering since last night to make the journey across the border. We've been told the border will be open for 3 days. So today, Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, people have already gathered with basic necessities that they're taking over the border to their loved ones. We've been told it's going to open at 9 and there's still a considerable amount of people that are coming.
I'm with my grandmother, my grandfather, my cousin and his son.
And where are you from?
I'm from America, from originally New Jersey.
And you're here to take your grandparents?
Right. You take my grandparents back home and I'll see my family. It's been 6 years I didn't see them, so I hope today is the day that we go in.
9 years, not see my family.
For 9 years, I haven't seen my family. My wife passed away. I come from the United Arab Emirates. I'm not sure I'll get in because I don't have a Palestinian passport, but I have this document and no Israeli citizen card. We don't know if we are or aren't allowed.
I've come to register my daughter in university. She's 18. Today's her birthday. The plane arrived in Cairo airport at 7, and we came here at 5 a.m. to take our turn. But of course, there is no turn. Everything is like you see it. It's chaotic.
There is no system. And it's just a mess. You cannot imagine how mess it is in the boundaries here. I cannot imagine this is Egypt. In fact, the main responsibility is the responsibility of the big officers who are organizing the system here.
We tried approaching the officers to ask them to explain how the system works and what was actually going on here. Unfortunately, they couldn't comment. They were too busy talking to other people.
The officer threatened him and he said, "I don't care, if you would like to arrest me, you can do." Then he asked the officer to arrest him.
For what though?
Just for replying, they're shouting and calling them names.
Why were the police officers shouting at them?
He didn't want them to pass from this way.
Chris and Nada are international activists. They've been camped at the border here over the last few months.
This main goal is to get this border open as if it were a normal border, based upon the international right of the liberty of circulation, you know, of goods and people. You know, the authorities here, they don't let them to talk to us. They even threaten them, if you talk to these people, you will never pass. So it is a little bit difficult.
Which authorities are stopping you?
Well, here we are in Egypt, so the people we are leading immediately with Palestinian people are the Egyptian soldiers.
It's 5 minutes to eight. Some army trucks have just arrived. We've got three police trucks and two tanks on the road.
They are blocking people 1.5 kilo behind the borders. The next block is around 50 meters before the borders. They have to find someone to carry their luggages, and everyone is using this need. For 1.5 kilo, they have to pay £100 for a donkey to carry.
Now I pay about £250. Yeah, just about 500 meter only. Just from border to border, £50. £50, about 50 meters, I should have to pay £50 to the carrier, because we are in jail. So we are bringing whatever we are need. We are bringing food, clothes, everything. You can see what we are bringing. As a tool, I bring it to my daughter. You see? Because we don't have such like this. And whatever you have to spend. At the last, you will say like that. I don't have anything more.
When everybody has to put his passport, and they are gonna call the names.
Yes. This small door, this is the only door is open for individuals.
They force the people to get their luggage up to the gate, and then they have to throw the luggage away and get inside.
The officers from national security came around and ordered us to remove our luggage from the doors. And they started picking our stuff up and throwing them about. They broke my fridge and this carton here and this bag. Why? They say we are following orders.
Okay. Why are the ambulances going in?
To bring injured and ill people. It's empty, yeah, to bring them from Gaza, yeah.
We got out in an ambulance because the buses would have been hard for us. The ambulances were also difficult, but we handled it so we can get treated outside. We've been here for almost 10 to 11 hours. 10 to 11 hours waiting at the border.
They came and picked us up at 5 a.m. in the ambulance till the Palestinian side. And then they got us in on foot. They made us walk till the Egyptian side.
The situation is this. It is a very hard condition for all this family, and there are all kinds of people, you know, old or tired or children, families, waiting maybe since midnight or since yesterday. Some people are waiting in Egypt for weeks.
I've been here for a month at the crossing, waiting, and it's me and everyone else here. I'm not alone.
I've been here since 8:30 a.m. and my son-in-law since the morning. He has been at the border crossing since 3 a.m. on the basis that he has Danish passport, but they're telling us there's no chance of getting him out, and we have Danish papers and Danish residency. I've been trying for 7 years to get residence for my son-in-law, and it's going to end in 15 days. 7 years lost. What's the use for me? Neither Islam, Judaism or Christianity would accept this. Not even an animal would accept this.
Well, we have been meeting a lot of people. There are thousands maybe here. Some past, maybe hundreds. We met also the people coming from Gaza, and it seems that more than 300 passed.
I just came out of Gaza, yeah.
Were you stuck inside, or why are you coming out?
No, I went for a visit to visit my family that lives there. Unfortunately, it's really hard to get there, and it's really hard to come back, too.
And I couldn't even watch my cousin's wedding because they had to open it earlier than it was. I can't travel with freedom. The treatment in the Egyptian border is slow. My granduncle, he had to go back just because he didn't. We have American passports, that's why they let us out, but he's from Saudi Arabia, and they're going to take him to the airport.
Why do you think it's like this?
That's the question I asked my parents when I was little. Why can't we go visit our grandma? My friends, all their grandmas come visit them. We go, like, they see their families all the time. Palestinians haven't done anything wrong.
My brother wants to go in now, yes? But they can't because they have an Palestinian ID. But he was before 10 years in Palestine. They can't have, now he is 19 years. And he wants to go in, he wants to go out, he can't, because the ID.
Why did you go into Gaza?
To visit my family.
And how are your family?
Very bad. It's very, very, very hard there. For me, it's the last one I come here again. It's too hard. Because this problem was we have here, Egypt are very bad with us. And the life in Palestine, in Gaza, we can't stay there.
So you just came out from Gaza Strip?
Yeah.
Have you got a family inside Gaza?
Yeah, all my family's in there.
How are they doing?
They were fine, but you know, it changed after the war. They don't have jobs and stuff like that. They don't have money to feed their children. I saw many like poor families. It was hard.
What passport have you got?
Canadian. I'm Palestinian. I have both.
Which one were you using to come out?
Canadian. Yeah. I won't use the Palestinian. They didn't know that I was Canadian until I told them that I want to call the embassy. So after I told them I want to call the embassy, they told me that, okay, calm down, we're going to see what's your problem and stuff like that. And they just let me go. The media doesn't, like the Canadian media don't show anything of what happened in here. Nothing.
I'm married with a Palestinian husband. Our son has also a Palestinian passport. Up to 2005. I was freely allowed to enter the Gaza Strip with my family. But it seems since the multinational forces and Egypt have taken responsibility of the border, they don't let enter anyone who hasn't a Palestinian passport. And so it was my case. I was simply refused.
Right now, my family is split. Half of them is inside and half of them is outside, and there's no communication. I don't know. Where to go? Shall I continue or withdraw?
I haven't seen my children in 2 years, and today I regret coming here. Who accepts this upon themselves from the nations that claim civilization?
It's just frustration. I don't know what to say about it. It's frustration when it reaches a level where you are not frustrated anymore, so you get crazy.
Me and my wife, we came all the way yesterday from UK to Egypt just to try to get in. Because we don't have an ID, Palestinian ID or Palestinian passport, they send us back.
What passport have you got? Can I see?
British passport, as you can see. My wife, his dad, is sick for 2 years. Anytime he can go. So we just, when we hear that the border has been opened, this has to see 1 hour, 2 hour, 1 day, whatever.
And when was the last time your wife seen her father?
15 years ago, sir. This is the situation.
Okay, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Early on in the morning, there was a lot of people here, a lot of luggage, and now it's a bit of calm.
I live in Switzerland. I wasn't home for 10 years. This is my third time I tried to go home, and I couldn't enter, so.
So what will you do now?
Wait, and I don't know. I guess I'll be back tomorrow or after tomorrow again, but I just can't leave because I can't give up on that. Because that's the real fight.
It's now the end of the day. And Basim, like many others, didn't make it across the border.
How has it been today? Can you just give me an overview of what you've seen?
Well, to tell you the truth, I know how hard it was for the Palestinians, whether at our side, at the Egyptian side, or the Palestinian side. But my heart was dancing, actually, because having all of those Palestinians entering, crossing the borders at both sides, it was a victory for me. It was a dream for me.
It was very emotional to see that so many Palestinians actually wanted to go back to their homeland, where there is lack of food, lack of electricity, lack of drinking water, and so many other problems.
What do you think will be happening in the next 2 days?
Less people, more organizing, and more decent treatment. I really expect that.
In London, shocked by what we've seen, we head to the SOAS University Department of Anthropology and Sociology to speak to an expert in the field of peaceful solutions for the Palestinian and Israeli problem. Andy Jong has been living in Palestine, published various academic papers on the subject, and was on the Freedom Flotilla.
Why do you think the Rafah border is closed?
That's a good question. I guess for the same reason as all of Gaza is closed off. You can basically say that there are two narratives for the reason for the entire blockade. Israel says that it came in reaction to Hamas rockets on the south of Israel. Other people would say that it's collective punishment to the people of Gaza because they elected Hamas in. There are many different possible solutions. We have many narratives. We have the Israeli narrative, we have the Palestinian narrative, there's an Arab narrative or a Western narrative. But we all agree that human rights are something that should apply to all people, regardless of race or religion or ethnicity. These guidelines are already there. Collective punishment is forbidden under international law. Everybody has the right to freedom of movement. And we don't have to come up with new rules, new sets of laws. These are already there. We just also need to extend them to the Palestinian people.
It's just a humiliation, which I never seen it before.
I wish all my family could do is have the same opportunity I have.
Yeah, just have a look at it and think of it, think about it and imagine that you have to deal with this.
I want to tell anyone to hear me. We want only thing, we want the airport in Gaza.
There is an airport in Gaza.
No, it's destroyed now.